I've told people if you really want to succeed in this business, you will learn early on that, you're in the people business and real estate's the commodity that we trade in.
Hello, welcome to episode 178 of the Smart Agents Podcast. As always, my name is Michael Walter, and I'll be your host. Joining us today is David Crabtree, broker owner of Home and Ranch Sotheby's International Realty. Located on the central coast of California, David has been selling real estate for more than 30 years. Over that 30-plus year career, David has acquired experience in everything from land development, residential home building, subdividing, and commercial development. Named one of America's top 100 real estate agents in 2018 and 2020, David shares how his past experience shaped his real estate career, how he's transitioned his business into what it is today, and how consistent goal setting has allowed him to achieve his success. But before we get on to today's featured interview, the all-new Smart Agents magazine has launched and is full of insights and strategies designed to help real estate agents grow their businesses. Inside, you will find interviews and advice from leading real estate professionals, marketing tips to flood your business with leads, and even swipe and deploy files full of practical tools to enhance your business. Subscribe now to receive your copy of the printed magazine each month and instantly get access to our online agent community and members-only templates. Click the link in the episode description or go to smartagents.com/magazine. Also, if you enjoyed this conversation, be sure to like and subscribe. The Smart Agents Podcast streams on all major podcasting platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and of course, YouTube. And finally, if you or someone else on your team has an incredible story or real estate tips to share with our community, send us a message of feedback at smartagents.com. We're always on the lookout for new stories to share. All right, let's get on to today's featured interview with David Crabtree. I really enjoyed our conversation, and I hope you do as well. Well, really the way I like to start everything out is if you could just introduce yourself to us a little bit, who you are and where you're at in the country.
Yeah, my name's David Crabtree. I'm located in, my office is in Templeton, California, but the closest little town that somebody may recognize would be Paso Robles or San Luis Obispo. We're on the central coast of California, about exactly dead center between Los Angeles and San Francisco. I think it's 1 mile difference going either way. So,
oh, wow. Yeah. You really can't get much more centrally located.
No, this is a big, big wine area here. I think we've got between 350 and 400 wineries that are located within, probably a 20 mile radius here.
So. Right. Definitely worse places to be located then. That's for sure.
That's right.
So. Yeah. So tell me, what was it that first got you interested in real estate?
Oh, I've told this to so many people over the years. I think, when I originally got interested in real estate, it was, I grew up very poor. I'll just put that out there. I grew up in a mobile home that blew inside and outside at the same time. And so my thought was, hey, if I just work hard and, make money, then my problems will be solved. Well, you get a new set of problems when you do that. But that being said, I was driven. I bought my first house when I was 19, and then, bought several more, in the preceding years. But, when I got into real estate initially, my thought process was, hey, I own a couple of properties. And, if I saw the great deals before anybody else did, then, I'd have an, inside track and I could take over the world. And that quickly changed when I got into real estate, because, then I was dealing with people. And it was just fascinating to me. It was, I could listen to somebody, they would, describe what they were looking for, and, I would go out and find it. Every day was different. I probably shouldn't say this out loud. I mean, I couldn't believe they were paying me as much as they were paying me to do it. It was like taking a fish and putting them in water. It's like, it was where I was naturally tuned to be. And I just loved it. I could work from, I could be at the office at, 7 o'clock in the morning and until 9 o'clock at night. I'd basically be calling people until they wouldn't take calls. I've met the most interesting people, and, have clients all over the world, and have met them through this business.
Right. And was that something you know, that kind of spark, did that happen almost instantly when you started talking with people and getting in front of them to help them purchase homes?
It did. It was, you know, it was basically the, I've told people, if you really want to succeed in this business, you will learn early on that, you know, you're in the people business and real estate's the commodity that we trade in. And, you know, for me, I love being around people. I love hearing what their stories are, where they come from, what are they trying to do? And then, you know, trying to put those pieces of the puzzle together. And so when I first got into it, you know, again, I went into it with my own, you know, selfish aspirations initially, thinking, you know, hey, I'm going to get in this and, you know, I'll make a lot of money and, you know, it'll all be about me. But as soon as I got in the business and started, you know, meeting with people, you know, and they had lives and families and ambitions, and helping them put their pieces of the puzzle together, it changed. You know, then it was, you know, wasn't about me, you know, where if I've made any mistakes in my careers, it would be when I got to the point of looking at the money, thinking about, well, okay, how much commission is this going to be? That's a slippery slope. When I've made the most and it seems like people are just throwing it at you, is when you're not looking for it, when you're just there to, you know, this is a service business. And if we're there to serve people and to help them, the money flows.
Yeah,
you absolutely. Know, and the rest of it becomes, you know, becomes an easier process. And I think as much as you want to put on a front of, you know, who you are and, you know, I'm important and, you know, I'm the best, people see right through that.
Right. Absolutely. And I think, you know, when you do come from it in that, of that way of, you know, you're just there to really help guide them through the process and meet those aspirations, you know, that turns into that lifelong, you know, referral that just keeps, you know, bringing in more business.
Yeah. Somebody asked me, I've got, you know, a property that I'm in a transaction with now, and I've sold it. Same property. This is the fourth sale. Wow. On that same property. And somebody asked me, I don't know how long ago it was, it's like, what is the most times that you've sold the same property? I said 11.
Wow. That's crazy.
I've been in this business, will be 34 years in August. And, you know, if you treat people right, you know, it's just, you know, it's like an annuity. It just keeps coming back. I've got some families I'm selling properties to the third generation of the same family.
Yeah. Tell me, so when you first got started in real estate, did you get started in the market that you're currently in, or were you in a different market and moved in?
Yeah. No, and that's, you know, that's what's funny is, you know, a lot of agents, when they're getting into the business, you know, they've watched the, you know, Selling Sunset and the things on TV, and they've got this vision of, you know, hey, I'm going to go sell the, you know, the $50 million estate, you know, on the water. And it's like, I got news for you. You don't get invited to that party. You have to earn your way in, then you'll get invited. When my first transaction in real estate was selling a condominium to, you know, a good friend of mine. It was his first home. It was $85,000. And, you know, the next one was, you know, probably very similar to that in size. You know, I didn't see any six figure, you know, or seven figure transactions for quite a while. It was just kind of building, you know, building that momentum and, you know, getting a clientele base. And then, you know, most of the time when you get in this business, you go in blind. Yeah. And you go out and you take your test and you study, you take your test, you get a license, and it's congratulations, I'm a real estate agent. And you just think, well, this is great. Everybody in the world that I know or have ever met in my life, they're my clients.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
They didn't get that memo.
So I think that's a, you know, having that, you know, having that understanding that when you first get in, you know, to really make sure, you know, to not turn down any listing or any deal, regardless of what the commission might be, because you never know what that, you know, that buyer, what their, how their life might change later on, and they'll be calling you up to buy their next property or sell and things like that.
I've told people that often is, you know, the certain things you're going to learn in this business is one is it's about the people. Real estate, you know, beautiful buildings, homes, you know, estates, they don't sell themselves. People do. You have to understand who they are, what their needs are, what their, you know, what their stress points are. And then you've got to be the person that, you know, comes with the solutions and figures out, you know, how do I make your life better? You know, it's, you know, rather than, you know, you're there to take something away.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we're salespeople, and, you know, reality is, you know, people are cautious of salespeople for good reason. And, you know, and that's just, you know, that's gotten magnified over the years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the questions I did want to ask you, you know, reading your bio, there's a lot of mentions of your, you know, your work in the special emergency response teams and with firefighters. How did that all come about within this, you know, same, I'm assuming it's the same time frame as the real estate was going on?
You know, I get asked to, you know, speak at different events and stuff like that. And people will always say, you know, tell your story. And, you know, my story isn't, you know, isn't that interesting to me because it's just my life. It's, you know, and you know, all of us will, you know, we'll go through segments in your life where you just do what you have to do, you know, and you get through it, you know, however you got to get through it. And like I said, you know, growing up in the, you know, in the situation I did, you know, wasn't, you know, I didn't have abusive parents or anything like that. My father passed away when I was 16 of cancer. And, you know, prior to that, you know, my mom couldn't work because she had to stay home and take care of him. So I went to work when I was, you know, 14. And it was, you know, wasn't, I was going to earn money for a car. It was, you know, whatever I brought home, being a dishwasher, that sometimes paid to keep the lights on and buy food. And sometimes it didn't. So working was, you know, it was just something that you had to do. And so, you know, going through high school, you know, when I had some learning disabilities, I couldn't really read when I graduated high school. So when I got out, you know, I think I graduated on a Thursday, went to work as a firefighter the following Monday, and, you know, worked for, you know, Cal Fire, which was a great experience. You know, I always say, you know, animals are smarter than firefighters because they're running away from the fire. We're running towards it and smiling at the same time. Great experience. So I worked there, you know, but prior to working there, I had worked at a hardware store, you know, through high school, or while I was in high school, and then went to work for, you know, California, you know, Department of Forestry, left there, you know, went to work as a welder. I worked as a welder for a while. And at the time, you know, I thought, gosh, these guys are making a ton of money. And, but I realized early on, it really wasn't the atmosphere I wanted to be around. And so I went back to the gentleman that, you know, had given me a job when I was in high school, and he was a workaholic. Great man. He's passed now, but I remember going to him and saying, "Hey, I'll come back to work for you and take a huge pay cut if you'll teach me, you know, you'll teach me business." And I said, "I'll make this commitment to you. I said, I'll be here before you show up every morning, and I won't leave until after you do." He kind of smirked and smiled. And it was kind of like a challenge. This guy truly was a workaholic. And you know, his comment to me, he says, "You know, that's great." He says, "But you know, if you want to be in business, you need to go to college." And I said, "You know, I'm not the college type. I want to own my own business. I, you know, I'm not a good, I'm not great at writing and reading, and that's really not my thing. And he says, well, I don't care if you get a degree. He says, but there's things you'll need to know. You'll need to know accounting. You'll need to know business management, marketing. He says, take these courses. And I kind of smirked and said, well, how am I supposed to do that if I'm going to be here before and after you, and you work forever? He just laughed and he said, take night courses. And I said, okay. So I did. I didn't walk away from any of those courses with an A or anything, but I muddled through a little bit and mostly learned from being around him and other people, and did that for a while, and ended up managing two hardware stores for him, by the time I was 19.
Oh, wow.
And then I had applied for and almost forgot about applying for it, but I had applied to go to work for the California Youth Authority. And got a call one day saying that they got the job. And I was just like, this is amazing. It's like they're gonna pay me $30,000 a year, and I only work 8 hours a day. It's crazy. So I went to work there, and then while I was working there, opened a clothing store. Or actually purchased a clothing store from somebody. It was a men's clothing store. And so I had that. And then I got into real estate, shortly thereafter. So my days consisted of, leave the house around 4, go work out, go to the clothing store and be in the real estate office by, 8 to 9 o'clock in the morning, and work there till 1:30 or 2 in the afternoon, and report for my 2:30 to 10:30 shift.
Wow.
At the Youth Authority. And so when I tell people I get off, people ask me all the time, what's the magic? What do you do to get to this level? I said, there is no easy button. Yeah. It's, I've figured it out over time, though. It's a simple mathematical formula. It's consistency over time. And it's hard work. Everyone says, I want this. The question is, are you willing to pay the price for what it is you want? Very simple. It's, if you want to be a millionaire, great. There's a lot of them. But you won't find them, partying on the beach, 5 days a week. They're going to get up early, go to bed early. They're not going to be a lot of fun to be around for a long time. Yeah. But if that's your goal, you can do it.
Yeah. Do you think that the, the different jobs that you did have, and the different, the people that you interacted with at the hardware store, and then I have to imagine the captains and the people that were your superiors in the fire department, all those people, and all that influence that you got, how big of an impact did that play on you having success in real estate?
Oh, I think it was a huge success. I mean, obviously at the hardware store, I was interacting with, all walks of people coming in the door, and, anything from the old guy coming in saying, hey, I need a nut or a screw this size, and, a drill bit that fits it, and you go figure out how to solve their problem. And it's just the interaction with the people. So that was, again, no different than being a, a waiter or a waitress or a bartender. You're interacting with people, and they're all different. They all got problems, and you figure out how to deal with it. So that was very, that was very helpful. Having, Tom Monk, the guy you mentioned with the hardware store, as a mentor early on, that was helpful to me. Working at the Youth Authority, those were all multi-felony offenders. We dealt with, everyone from murderers, rapists, you name it. They were there, hardcore gangbangers. That was a great experience, because you had a personality that when you walked in, that's who you were. And if you were smart and disciplined, you left that personality when you walked outside the door. But it was like a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde to survive in that. But that taught me a lot about, being able to read people, because, the people you deal with in the prison, they're master manipulators. there's two types of people there, victims and predators. Yeah. And if you're not one, you're the other.
Right.
So it gives you, it's a crash, it's a master class in humanity, kind of at its lowest level. But again, great learning experience. And so to, basically, be dealing with clientele, talking about selling, properties, and then, an hour later, I'm sitting in a quad with a bunch of murderers and rapists and gangbangers and what have you. It's you learn to adapt quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also it helps put into perspective maybe some of the crisis management on the real estate side, mm-hmm. as opposed to dealing with the crisis management inside that quad.
Yeah, it's good point. I have a lot of people will say, "Well, you're always so calm. What you see on the outside should be.
Yeah.
What's going on inside? It's like that's our job, is to kind of keep that in its box. There's a lot of people in this business. I call them crazy makers, and they spend their whole career, their whole life. They take little things and make them big. I spend my entire life trying to take big things and make them small. When I meet with a client and, they're telling me what their crisis is, it's like, okay, let's break that down into, it's like, okay, it's not that bad. and it's more manageable. And if your job is to guide your clients through difficult transactions and big, big life-changing decisions financially, where they live, all that kind of stuff, they're stressed. They're stressed all the way through the process, whether you see it or not from the outside, they are. And when they see you lose it, they're, you're going to have to pull them off the ledge.
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of fast forwarding a little bit, tell me, a little bit about getting into the market that you are currently in, and, how that kind of came about, and how you've, it's just it's a diverse, market there, and a lot of different things that you can get yourself into there.
Sure. And like I said, when I got into the business, like everybody, you'll talk to anybody that'll talk to you. Success in this business, like it is in most businesses, is getting to the point where you deal with the people you want to, and you can pick and choose. when you're climbing the ladder, you deal with them all. rich, poor, jerks, nice people, all of them. Where my business really transitioned was, many years ago. And, I've always been a guy that, says you got to have goals. You got to write them down. You got to know what you're after. 'Cause then you can gauge, am I close? Am I, did I set my goal too high, too low? You can adjust. I had gone to a real estate seminar, and this is an interesting story. I don't want to get too far off topic, but I applaud anybody that's taking their time to listen to your podcast, to go to seminars, to read books, to become better. Years ago, I had, when I got, into being a broker, and before I left the youth authority and so forth, I worked for three brokers that owned the office that I worked in. One of them, I was always going to, whenever somebody was in town or close by that was putting on a seminar, I'd go there and I would buy, back then it was the cassette tapes, VHS tapes, whatever it was they were selling, I was buying it. And I would watch it, and I would, I'd pick little pieces out of it, how to, they did this marketing better, or, sent out these kind of letters, whatever it was, I jumped on it. One of the brokers I worked for, she asked me about something, I said, well, I'm going to this a seminar on Thursday, so I won't be here. And she just, rolled her eyes, shook her head, and she goes, sucker born every minute. She goes, those people love to see you coming. And I just kind of, kind of thought, you know, as my broker and teacher, that was really not the best thing to say. But, you know, I wasn't in a position to question it. But 3 years later, I bought her out of the business she owned.
Oh.
But 2 years prior to that, I was making three times more money than she made.
Yeah.
Because you take the time to make yourself better.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, when you asked about, you know, where it transitioned, I had gone to one of those seminars, and I think the guy's name was Rick DeLuca. And he had a pretty simple system. He said, you know, and I tell agents that all the time. I said, the most important thing that you'll ever possess as a real estate agent or a real estate broker is your sphere of influence. People that you know. And he says, if you don't have one, get one. And he said, you know, everybody, he said, everybody in the audience, I don't know how many people were in this, you know, auditorium at the time, you know, should have a sphere of influence of 200 to 250 people. And he says, I come up with that figure because, you know, nationally at the time, he says the average wedding is 200 to 250 people or funerals. He says, if you don't have that many people on your list, go to a funeral, get some of theirs. They don't need them anymore. He says, but you know, you have their name, their, you know, back then we had mailing addresses, not emails, and phone numbers. And he goes, these are people that know you. If you, you know, if you send them something in the mail, they'll look at it. If you call them on the phone, most likely they'll pick up the phone. And so I started putting together my sphere of influence list. And I started, you know, working on that, you know, constantly. And, you know, always trying to grow that and make it bigger and then stay in contact with those people. And, you know, and I did. I went from, you know, and that at that time he asked, you know, you know, what are your goals? I was like, I don't know. He's like, well, how many transactions do you do a year? And at that time, I think I was doing, and I was working the three jobs at the time. Mm-hmm. And I think the year prior I had done like 15 transactions or 18, something like that. And I said, well, okay, my goal for next year is 50. And so then I had to break down, you know, if I'm going to do 50 transactions, what am I going to have to do to get there? I'm going to have to contact this many people, you know, this many phone calls, this many letters, you know, and, you know, so, and I hit it. I hit 50. So the next year I, okay, I'm going to raise it to 150 and, or to 100 and then, you know, 150. And I think I had a goal of doing 200 transactions in a year. And, you know, I think I came close, but didn't quite get there and was going absolutely insane, you know, trying to manage all that. So then I switched my focus to being a dollar amount. I'm going to do, you know, this many millions next year. Well, I said, you know, if I just concentrate on bigger ticket properties, I don't have to do as many. I won't go quite as crazy. And so then in my strategy of trying to figure out how to do that, you know, we live in a small area. I mean, Paso Robles is, you know, back then was smaller, but now it's like 35,000 people. And it wasn't as affluent as it is now. I mean, a big transaction back then was, you know, 600,000. So then and I had started dabbling in doing some development and a little spec building. So I said, you know, hey, I'm going to just start meeting more developers and contractors and see if I can find projects for them. And then if I sell them that, you know, when they subdivide it, then I can sell off all of the pieces. And so I was really focused on trying to find properties that could be developed that were higher end product type. And I did, and I put one of those deals together and, you know, brought the investment group together and, you know, ended up selling them the property, sold, you know, all of the properties in that development. And it was both basically a land deal. So then I brought in other people. I had met contractors to build the homes and then sold the homes for them. And so then that just kept changing. And, you know, the more of those higher end people that I was dealing with, you know, we formed relationships with them. They introduced me to their friends. And then, you know, pretty soon those connections just kept growing and growing. And, you know, now I've got, like I said, I've got clients in, you know, Japan, China, Argentina, France, Italy, you know, Wall Street bankers, hedge fund managers, you name it. So, and that's, you know, and if you treat people right, it just, it's the growth doesn't end.
Right. Absolutely. Especially, you know, with, you know, going from the, you know, the land development to the actual home building and the seller, I mean, that's just, it just starts to build exponentially on itself. And then when you have, you know, when I have to imagine, you know, everybody's happy with the development of that land, that they're going to be looking for more pieces of land to develop in your area.
It's true. And, you know, I tell agents all the time, and when they say, well, that's great, you know, I want to get into that. I said, well, here's what you don't go to a developer, a builder, an investment banker. What I see often is, and I get it now because, you know, we own a development company. So I'll have agents call me and say, would you be interested in buying this? And what I get a kick out of, and I guess it's not funny, but it's real, is, you know, say there's a property out there that was $3 million and it got reduced to $2 million. And the, you know, agents see, oh, it's $1 million reduction. You know, wow, that's a great deal. They'll call up the first, you know, person in their Rolodex that they think has, you know, $2 million to spend and say, you know, this is a great deal. You should buy it. The person on the other end of the line is going, why? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, they just reduced it $1 million. So what? What does that mean to me? You have to do the homework up front. You have to be able to have it written out on a piece of paper and say, you know, just like with the group that I work with, it's like, look, this is 257 acres. You know, I've done my research. There's a new ordinance in our county called transfer development credits. It's zoned, you know, rural residential, which, you know, maximum or minimum size would be 10 acre parcels. Under a TDC program, we can double the density, leave 65% of it open space, put gates on it, sell off small clusters, you know, make it very exclusive, you know, and walk them through the process. And I said, you know, here's your, the amount that you're going to pay for the land. Here's my estimate of what it's going to cost to develop it. And here's what it's going to be worth, you know, per parcel when it's done. Well, if you're the person that brought them that, they're like, great, you're in.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And when you, you know, having that, you know, that Rolodex of clients that are maybe looking to develop in your area, you know, I think it is very important to, you know, to be up to date on when any type, you know, maybe there's a zoning ordinance that does change, to be right on it and to be able to reach out, you know, if that is going to help push somebody over, then maybe that was what was holding them back from going forward with a deal, is that there was a little bit of a zoning issue or something like that that might change. Right. How important is it to be really organized with all those things and knowing all those needs that your, you know, your client's looking for?
I mean, it's important, but again, you don't have to be the expert. I mean, you, again, I tell people I'm a very, you know, I'm certainly not an engineer's mind. I'm more of a 30,000 foot view, you know, concept type guy versus down in the weeds. But, you know, to be a good real estate agent or broker, to be a good developer, you know, to be a good banker, you know, doesn't matter what you do. You have to be able to know, one, what you don't know, and be able to find the best people that do know that and put together a good team. So when I was trying to figure that stuff out, you know, I didn't know all the ins and outs of it. I just kind of had a concept as like, okay, I transfer development credit from here. It's like, well, how does that happen? Well, I had to go ask people. So I started talking with, civil engineering firms. Say, okay, well, how does this program work? And, if we had a program or a project like that, would you guys, would you guys want to handle it? Well, of course. Well, now they're on your team. They're going to give you any information you can to, because you're going to benefit them. Learn, figure out what you don't know, and then, start figuring out what are the resources. And it doesn't matter if it's, large scale development project or if it's a simple, two bedroom, three bedroom house. It's like, okay, what does this need? Well, it needs a paint job. Well, I've got a painter. You become, like when we started the bank years ago, that was one of the things as the board of directors when we were, it's like, hey, this is going to be our clientele group. We're going to put together and be, kind of like a concierge for all of our customers. Do you need the best attorney, the best financial planner, an estate lawyer for wills and trusts? It's like, you don't have to go find it. You could call us and we'll tell you, hey, we've vetted these people. They're the best. You just made people's life easy. Same as a real estate agent. Your job is to, be able to field the question, understand what their need is, and say, I've got a guy. And then you become the guy.
Absolutely. When for these particular properties, and like you said, you have clients all over the world, how are you marketing these projects to these different groups worldwide?
Well, again, going back to the most important thing that you can have is your sphere of influence. I've got a very large, sphere of influence and great people. I mean, some people would say some are very wealthy, some aren't. I mean, some run nonprofits for that matter. But every time that I have a property that I'm going to be selling, it goes out to the traditional marketing segments to, Zillow, Trulia, Google, all of our different websites and things like that. But probably the most beneficial group that it goes to is my sphere of influence. Because every time they get an email from me, they'll click on it. And it's, I always say, never underestimate the power of your network. It's not who you know. It's who Michael knows. If I send something to you, I may know you're not in the market to buy a new home or a development project or whatever, but it's like, oh, that looks interesting. You may have just been in a conversation or a lunch meeting with somebody the day before that says, we've been looking for this. It's like, I got a guy. I just got something in my email that you might be interested in. And that's how it grows.
Yeah, I think that's so important that not for newer agents or anybody to not be afraid to send those new listings on the market or anything to your past clients, even the ones that aren't in the market to purchase right
Exactly.
now.
Well, that's what I try to impress upon agents is that going back, it's stepping back a few years, but like I said, when I got in this business, it was like, well, gosh, everybody I know is my client. Well, when I got in the business, I was 25, but I probably looked like I was 15. I would just call up people. It's like, well, these are the parents of some friends that I went to high school with. They're my clients too, because I've been to their house. The idea of them handing me their house to go list or sell them a property at the time, they go, that's cute. We're glad that you're in the business, but no, we're not going to be your guinea pigs. And so it's a tough business to break into. Usually most agents' first transaction is a, a family member or a friend. And sometimes that's their last transaction. But as you grow and you keep growing that list, you start, people start talking and you gain credibility by what you do and how you act. And, and you constantly have to be in front of those people. Like I tell the agents all the time, if you are not talking to your clients, somebody else is. And that's the, that's the, the knife in the heart, thing that you get is, you're thinking, okay, these are my past clients. I've sold them property, whatever. And then you log into your computer one morning and you see their house is on the market. You go, what happened? Well, if you haven't talked to them in 5 years, well, whose fault is that? I think NAR, National Association of Realtors, did a study that people were surveyed after buying a house, living in a house for, I think it was 3 years, and it was almost 80% of them couldn't remember the name of the agent that sold them the house. So, if your past clients have gone on to somebody else, you are to blame.
Yeah, absolutely. My last question, kind of topic I wanted to touch on with you, was, and you mentioned it earlier, is how important, the goal setting was for you. For new agents and then even, seasoned agents, how important is that to really have, set goals out in front of you to where you always are pushing yourself to get better?
It's paramount. I mean, and it's something that, you should never stop doing. Your career aspirations and things like that are going to change over time. But, just like when I talk with clients, it's amazing when I ask people, what do you want? If you ask a bigger question, what do you want out of life? They can't answer it. They just give you the deer in the headlights look of, because they don't know. They've never written it down. It's like, I've given this talk before. It's, to be successful takes three things. One, raise your standards. Most people don't have high standards. And when I say that, I mean, I can give you a few examples. For me, I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and there's days when I'm tired and I'm trying to justify in my head, cause it's cold and it's like, I got a tickle in my throat. Maybe I should sleep in. It's my standard. If I say I'm going to do this many transactions this year, that's mine. It's my standard. The hardest thing you'll do is raise your standard. The hard thing that's harder than that is to maintain it. And when I say that most people, to set yourself above, it doesn't take much. Look around. It seems like, we're in a race to the bottom right now. Everybody's a minimalist. What is the least I have to do to not get fired, to still get a paycheck, or in our business, to have my clients not call and scream at me? What is the minimum? So if you raise your standards a little bit, you're going to stand out. It makes you special. The second thing you need to do is come up with a strategy, a goal. Know what you want to get. It's like I use the, it's like the Britney Spears song, tell me what you want, what you really, really want. It's like, write it down. If you say, hey, I'm in the business and I'm going to, my goal is to do, $10 million in transactions this year, write that down. And then secondly, ask yourself why. If you know why you want to achieve something, there's a good chance you will. So, write down your goals. I tell people it's a great thing when you come up with a goal is write it down. If most people do New Year's Eve resolutions, they think about it. It's like, oh, this is what I'm going to do. And poof, it's gone. There's the next level of person that actually writes down, this is my goal. This is what I'm going to do this year. They've gone to the next level. The next level, someone that writes it down, shares it with people they know, posts it on the wall. It's like, chances are they're going to get there. It's like, you know, the one thing that people hate in life more than failing is for other people to know that they failed. It's like you've raised the game. You've raised your standards. The third thing is, you know, coming up with a strategy. So there's three things that you have to succeed in this world. You have to have higher standards. You have to have goals. And you have to have a strategy. And I'm honored and always dumbfounded when I have people say, hey, I want you to teach me. It's like, I'm not very smart. It just said I couldn't read when I graduated high school. The smartest people in the world, most of them have written books. It's like, if you just want a strategy, go to Barnes & Noble. Those are the best-selling books in the world. And you can go through row after row, and they'll tell you how to be the best real estate agent, the best cook, best husband, best lawyer. It's all there. And they'll tell you exactly what they did. I mean, Warren Buffett has a book. It's right. Like, tell you how to be the best investor. If it was just knowing what to do step by step, the world would be filled with successful people. But we're not. Because if you don't possess the first two, you can't get there. You know, and to make it in real estate, it's not an easy business. You know, it used to be an 80-20 rule. You know, 80% of the business was done by 20% of the people. Now with technology, it's more of a 90-10. I mean, I look at it all the time. I get the sheets and say, who's the number one in the county? It's called broker metrics. It doesn't matter what somebody puts in the newspaper or, you know, online. This is fact. This is what closed. And it's like the difference between the top, you know, you'll have people that are doing, you know, $200 million a year in sales. And then there's, you know, probably four people. And then it drops all the way down to, you know, 60. And then there's a couple more people, and then it drops down to like, you know, 30.
Right.
And then on down the line. I mean, it falls off fast.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you had mentioned it earlier just about going to those different seminars and picking little bits and pieces, mm-hmm. you know, from those different people. And, you know, we are in an era with, I mean, there's so much information out there, and there's so many people like yourself that are willing to share how they've found success. And you can be picking up this information on your drive to work or your drive to your next listing. And I think that's what's so great about the real estate community as a whole, is just the willingness for so many people like yourself to share their successes and some of their tips.
No, and I think, and again, I firmly believe that. I mean, I've had some wonderful mentors and teachers in my life. And, you know, when I got in, you know, into this business and, you know, my business world, I knew nothing. I had no formal training. I had no college education, you know, had no money. It was just like, so when I met somebody that was the type of person that I wanted to be, or at least from the outside, I thought I wanted to be, you know, I was, you know, I was like a barnacle. I'd latch myself onto them so fast and just, you know, can I take you to lunch? Can we have coffee? You want a glass of wine? It was just like, tell me your story. And, you know, some of the things, you know, some of these people you talk to, you know, regardless of what people may perceive out there in the world, most wealthy people are self-made. I mean, there is a lot of trust fund babies and stuff like that out there. And, you know, that's, you know, God bless them. You know, their parents worked hard. Yeah. But most of them made it. And the one thing that I've learned is that, you know, some of the greatest mentors I've had and their clients, their personal friends, some of them are business partners of mine now. When they worked there, they bootstrapped it up. You know, some of them, you know, college, some of them doctors, I mean, you name it. But when they, you know, when they see somebody that's willing to work hard, put in the time, not looking for something for nothing. It's like, it's, you know, it's that raised standard thing I just talked about. They look at you, their eyebrows come up, go, ah, this person's different. They will give you the time. They will give you the wisdom and the knowledge. I used to say that, years ago, there was reasons why some people weren't smart or they didn't have access to things. They didn't have access to books. They didn't have access to the stuff that we have now. It's like, now if you don't know something, you're just lazy. I'm amazed. I mean, you can get onto YouTube and figure out how to do anything.
Right.
It's like you can rebuild an engine, you can build a house from a
Right.
YouTube video
Absolutely.
because you take the time to do it. If you want to be a great real estate agent, they have your podcasts and they have other resources at their fingertip. So, to just say I don't know means you didn't try that hard.
Yeah. Well, I really do appreciate you taking the time, to share your story and then also, touch on so many of these great things. And I am a big believer in the fact that all this information, it is readily available. It's there. You just got to go out and find it and put
Go
it into
get
action.
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go get it. And then when you learn it, teach it to someone else. I mean, there's a certain feeling that, I always say when you help somebody else, that is something that you will never, ever forget. I mean, I do a lot of work at a homeless shelter and, sit across the table from some of those people. And when they call you a year later and they're in a house and they tell you that it was because, some of the talks that you had with them, you will remember that the rest of your life. So it's like, and everybody around you don't have to tell them. You don't have to tell people, hey, I'm a great guy, I volunteer for this or that. They'll know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, I really do appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today.
You bet. So, my pleasure.
I really want to thank David for joining us today. He was full of such great, insightful advice for not only finding success in real estate, but life in general. So once again, if you think you or someone else on your team has an incredible story or real estate tips to share with our community, send us a message to feedback@smartagents.com. Well, that wraps things up for this episode, but remember, follow the show wherever you listen to podcasts and make sure to subscribe to the Smart Agents YouTube channel. Again, I'm Michael Walter, and we'll see you on the next episode.